When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the PFC podcast. The views and opinions you are about to hear are the speakers and do not necessarily reflect those of anyone else. Now on to the podcast.
Welcome back to the PFC podcast. This is Dennis and today I am with Monty. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. So I asked Monty on from Delta Development. I think at least for prolonged field care, this is probably the only gear that's really specific to prolonged field care, other than bigger aid bags. So since this is the first time on the podcast, would you mind doing a quick introduction of yourself?
Yes. So Monty Leija, I was an Army medic, the old 91 Bravo. I don't know. People probably don't know what those guys are anymore, but I was 91 Bravo. And then I went to, you know, SF selection, got selected as a Special Forces Green Beret. And then I went through the course in the 90s. So I'm an old school medic, but I did go to one of the first rotation in Afghanistan in February 2002. We had our little G camp, I would say it was, you know, four wall, big walled compound, 12 ODA guys and like 25 to 50 indigenous forces on the ground in 2002. So that's when I started going to Afghanistan. And then I went to a special operations unit there around 2005. So from 2002 to 2005, I had four rotations into Afghanistan. And then I started rotating to Iraq. And I got like four or five rotations there with direct action. And then I rotated back to Afghanistan in 2010, did some VIs there for a couple rotations. And then my last two rotations were like an operations role. So, you know, mass sergeant operation role. So that's my military career. And then since then, I've been doing a lot of training with special operations, setting up their CBRN med, going into stabilization and some other things. So I'm still doing a lot of training as far as prolonged field care or tactical combat casualty care. I'm still involved in that. But in that process, I was approached by some engineers that had a good idea about building a battery-powered blood refrigerator. And so we got together, and that's kind of how we started Delta Development, was to build this battery-powered blood refrigerator, you know. But when we first met, they were going to build a big blood refrigerator, and I just advised them, maybe we should go with the smallest blood refrigerator you can do, because I know the guys need the blood, like right now on missions, and not try to build this bigger one. So that's kind of how we got there, was like, hey, they need blood right now, so let's make the smallest one possible for the ODAs, the Rangers, the SEALs, all these guys can start carrying blood now because they're out there in the world doing real world operations. So kind of that's my military career to how we got to the blood refrigerator here with Delta Development Team.
Nice. So, which leads me 100% into my next question was, in the age of the brand new tourniquet and, you know, a different packaging for gauze, why on earth did you pick, I want a small refrigerator?
Okay, good question. Well, one, you know, there's a lot of tourniquets out there, so I don't think I can make a better tourniquet. We actually, when I first went to Afghanistan, we didn't even have the commercial tourniquet. I was teaching our team members how to use the old, cravat with the stick type deal. So that's where I learned how to do the tourniquet. But going to, what drove me to get to this blood was, one, you know, in 2005, it was identified that, yeah, we're stopping the bleed, but I was on a mission set that was in Northeast Iraq, and we weren't getting any helos in for hours. Nobody was coming to get our guys for hours. I was going to have to hold on to somebody and then move them to a local hospital there in Solmania and continue my treatment until we could get someone in to evac them. So at that time we determined, hey, we need to carry blood product. And this was in 2007. We need to carry blood product. So let's do a trial with plasma and see if we can even make this, you know, happen. So at that time, for about 6 months, I was carrying cold plasma. And so I would get it from the supply chain. It would arrive out to me. I would put it in a fridge. I'd keep it cold. We had the Hemocool too. So I keep it cold in the Hemocool. And then we'd get a mission, and then I would take it out the Hemocool and let it thaw, put it in a cooler, and then go to the mission, come back from the mission, take it out of the cooler, and put it back in the Hemocool. And in retrospect, when I think about it, I had no temperature control whatsoever. So if I had blood product back then, there is potential that I went out of standards for sure at that time. But what I did determine was it was too difficult. The cold chain logistics of moving blood across the battlefield for multiple missions was too difficult to do. And then the research started coming out, you know, in 2015. Hey, blood products, you guys are stopping the bleed. Great. But you got to get blood products on these guys. The evac times are going to get longer. We got to get blood product on them. And so I was like, when the engineers came to me with the idea, I was like, yeah, that is a deficit that the military has is, how do they move blood product throughout the battlefield in a temperature-controlled device? Like, you're out there way, ways out there and away from evac, and your casualties bled out. It's great you stopped the bleeding, but they're only going to get worse if you don't fill the tank, right? Tank got empty. You got to put something back in the tank once you stop the leak.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So let's, I guess, talk about some of those parameters that we are working with. So just from the whole blood transfusion, CPG, the pre-hospital walking blood bank, CPG, some of the parameters we have to work with, you know, you have to keep, if you're going to store blood, you have to keep it between 1 and 6 degrees Celsius. The max it can get is 10 degrees Celsius before you have to throw the blood out, essentially. With just an insulated case, I think it's next to impossible to keep that for very long, right? So,
with the ambient temperatures, temperatures, right? Yeah. So the hotter it is, the faster that cooler is going to thaw. So even though you have the manufacturer's recommendation time, you got to know what they're using for their baseline temperature. So even though they say, oh, it's 72, we'll say 72 hours, but they're talking about 80 Fahrenheit. And all the places I've been in the last 15 years deployed, it's been above 100, 105, 110 Fahrenheit. It's been hot. So although they advertise these devices can do can carry for a certain time, but you got to know what their baseline they're testing off of.
Right. So just in experience, we don't have to say a specific manufacturer of those cases, but since they're ambient, they're normal, they're tested, ambient temperature is 80. What was your experience? How has that affected the time? Has it been like, you know, 50% faster, 25% faster? You know, how did you incorporate that into your planning?
So for our device, we're the only device that works at 120 Fahrenheit, and we publish our numbers at 120 Fahrenheit. So you can go to these other devices and see what they publish, and they have the thaw number goes pretty quick. Mm-hmm. So I think the golden hour, cooler in 115 Fahrenheit is totally thawed within 6 to 12 hours.
Okay. So you're definitely outside that window. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're in like 100 Fahrenheit, 105 Fahrenheit operating environment, your cooler's not going to get you a day. It's going to get you 6 to 12 hours.
Yeah.
And that's one of the better ones.
Yep. And then once it gets outside of that 10 degrees Celsius, you have 24 hours to either use that blood or get rid of it because it can't go back into storage.
Yep. And so that's a key point that you brought up there is going back into storage, right? All the temperature guidelines are one is if it gets so hot, then the bacteria grows in the blood product, right? But the key to that is maintaining that temperature so that you can put blood back into the storage device. If you go above the limit, then you can't store your blood. You have to use it or get rid of it, right? So again, with the device here, it's tracking those temperatures for you so you know whether it's going out of storage range. But we maintain the range of storage for the longevity of the blood use, right? So if you take this out and you come back, your blood is still good to store.
Yeah.
In the civilian world, it's a set line when they talk about transport temperatures. So yeah. Like if you're transporting blood, you're allowed to get up to 10°C. But that means you're transporting from a facility, not doing a patrol for 12 to 20 hours. Yeah. That's not what that transport guideline's for. It's for to move blood product from the Red Cross to the hospital and then the hospital to the floor. Those are the transport times. We talk about storage times because we want to store our blood, meaning over days of storage. So there is two temperatures there, and we work in the storage temperature, or that's what we talk about when we talk about our numbers.
Okay, so we're staying between that 1 and 6 for as long as absolutely possible. I have a kind of a wazoo question. Maybe you know the answer, maybe you don't. But because the biggest concern is bacterial growth, right? So just off the top of my head, like where is all this bacteria coming from? Is it because we're not drawing it properly, or is it just blood or bacteria that are normally in the blood?
It's just the bacteria that's normally in the blood.
Okay. So there's no way around that one.
It just starts growing after a certain amount of time and heat, but it's, you can't predict when it's going to start growing. You don't know at what temperature it'll start growing at what time. You just know that once it hits this temperature, bacteria will start to grow. You don't know when it's going to grow.
Yeah. Okay.
Or how fast.
Right. So, you know, the CPGs that gives us our kind of rules of the game. Everybody knows that rules can be, especially in soft, swayed one way or the other, depending on the situation, right? So, like when it comes to actually having viable blood on the battlefield, being able to give to a casualty, obviously we're going to store it as properly as we possibly can for as long as we possibly can. Where are those kind of gray lines?
The gray line is in that transport storage temperature. It's okay. The gray line is if you use transport temperature times, then you can play with the temperature a little bit if you're talking about transport. But if you get into transport and get too far, then you just can't put it back into storage, right? You have to either use it or get rid of it. But your gray area is between storage temperature and transport temperature. Because if you look at the temperatures, you're like, why can, if we store it, it's okay at 1 to 6°C. But if we transport, it's okay to be up to 10°C. And see, that's the confusing part. That's where people get confused on that little gray area, that little rule of, well, that's what EMS kind of tries to do is say that they're transporting blood. So that's how they try to get away with it. But the blood banks aren't having it. Their blood banks are like, you're not transporting from facility to facility. You're carrying it on the ambulance. So you need to maintain that storage temperature of the blood product. So the gray area is that comparing transport to storage temperature.
Okay. And how, I guess, you know those times better, definitely better than I do. So that between that 6 and 10, how much time do I have and still remain within the rules?
And it's 4 hours. The hospitals. 4 hours.
Okay.
And it's, and there's a lot of research out there. I think in the UK, they may be going a little beyond the 4 hours. I think they might be looking at like a 6 to 8 hours window. Okay. But in the US, it's 4 hours. And then once it goes above 6C, and the reason they use that is because when it leaves, the blood leaves a blood bank, it goes in a cooler. Yeah. So the blood bank doesn't have control over the temperature anymore of the recording. And so that's just their hard rule because they want to get that blood back into storage. And so they know as long as it hasn't gone more than 4 hours, we can put that back into storage. It could be, you know, 6 to 8 hours. But again, the blood bank doesn't have control of the oversight of the temperature once it leaves. And so that's kind of their protection.
Yeah, that cold chain control. Yeah. So here's another Wazoo question that maybe you don't know, but you're the best guy that I can ask. Is it a cumulative 4 hours or is it 4 hours at a given time? Does that make sense?
Yes. I think it's the 4 hours at you can take it out. They send it to like the hospital sends it 4 hours. They put it back in their refrigeration. They get it back into storage and they can put it out for another 4 hours, so they could do that again. But again, it's really how well they're tracking the temperatures.
On
the how if it's going out of storage time or that. But I think the blood banks do that. And I think we had talked about, you know, there is no research that says that blood that you have storage temperature and then you take it out one day and then you put it back into storage temperature and then you take it out the next day. There's no research for cumulative days of taking blood out of blood storage. The key to that, of doing that, is just knowing what the temperature is of the blood through that whole process.
Yeah.
So if you know what the temperature of blood is the whole process, you can put it back in storage. But if you lose sight of what that temperature has, where it has been, then putting it back in storage is probably a bad idea because you don't know if there was a point where bacteria started growing.
Yeah.
So if you can know the temperature range the whole time, you're good to go back and forth.
Okay. As long as you're just keeping between storage and that transport time no longer than 4 hours, then you're still safe.
Yep. Yep. Between that, up to that 10C.
Yep. Okay. Another thing, the reason why I really like your product is, you know, yes, I can take blood from hospital, keep it stored and to use on the battlefield. But my mind is thinking more, even more austere, because that's what I do. Going into with your product, am I able to actually run my own mini blood bank?
You can. Now,
okay.
Again, you would have to, I'm sure there's some policies that would have to be written, I would think.
Sure.
We'll start with that first. But yes, if you had the policies in place or your battalion surgeon's like, yeah, you guys can run a blood bank. Yes, this is a fully qualified blood bank refrigerator. I can go take this to, actually, we've had it tested by two blood banks so far. And the blood bank in Austin said, this is a better blood refrigerator than ones we have in our facility. That's how well it performed. So it is a total blood refrigerator. You can put blood in here all day and night. Some refrigerators that are out there that are battery powered are called medical refrigerators, and they go up to like an 8C, but ours is constant 4.5C throughout the life. As long as the battery's got power and it's, or, you know, plugged into the wall, it's a constant 4.5C blood temperature. So anyways, it is a fully qualified blood refrigerator, can go any blood bank. So you can pull your blood out, draw your blood from, you know, your G's or your other members of the force there, and put it in this device. It'll pull it down. Of course, you know, you don't have the testing and all the other stuff that's required as far as armed service blood bank goes. But if you draw it off your guys, you can put it in this container. It'll pull down the blood temperature to storage temperature, and then it's a blood bank. It's a blood bank refrigerator.
Yep.
Yeah. And so, again, in my mind, I just go, in my mind, being an SF medic and being in Afghanistan and stuff, is like, this would be perfect for a G camp. Mm-hmm. You know, you have 50 indigenous forces, you have 12 ODA guys, you're out there as a ways, you're not getting resupplied, but you need to keep blood product at 4 to 4.5 C. This would be a great, if you had two. You know, you had two, you could draw blood. You could have almost 12 units of blood right there in your, what do we used to call that thing? The clinic, the G hospital. Then we used to call them a G hospital, right? So we used to have that G hospital. So you could have a couple of refrigerators in there, do your walking blood bank, put your blood in there, and it's ready to go. You could do your walking blood bank before you even need it.
Right, right. And that's key, and have is blood just storage. Being able to extend that reach. Obviously, we want to stay within the rules the best we possibly can, but sometimes the mission does not allow, doesn't allow you that luxury.
If I was in Afghanistan in 2002 and I had this, I would have went out there and drawn the blood and put it in my little camp hospital there. I would have had blood on hand for sure. You know, we had some casualties that need blood, but there's just other things you could use blood for other than just a trauma patient, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You get those sick guys. You get those weird sicknesses on camp, and you're just like, maybe the guy got hepatitis. You're like, wow, he looks like he got hepatitis. Maybe I need to give him some blood. I don't know. Yeah. There's just some other thoughts on that, other than just trauma.
Well, you got, you know, any kind of disease where you're lysing cells, sepsis, you know, it's hematocrit's going down, you know, SpO2s are being affected, you know, run your ISTAT. Like, yeah, this guy needs blood, right? You know, maybe platelets would have been better, or plasma would have been better, but I don't have that. I got whole blood, right?
Yeah, whole blood.
Right. And I mean, if a unit of whole blood for people who didn't need all the components killed people, I mean, we wouldn't have professional cycling, right? So
That's right.
So definitely teleconsult before you just send it, but it's definitely a super valuable resource, and being able to push that farther forward is an incredible ability. But keeping within, trying to stay within the rules of our best of our ability, cold chain is super important. And you were telling me just recently about your device's ability to keep data on the temperatures within. I've used your device for about a year now, and I know I can tell what by pushing buttons what the temperature's at, but I actually did not know at all how to get that data. So would you mind kind of running me through this quick?
Yeah, so I don't know if you'll be able to see that. And you know, and then the other thing is, you know, when we first started and it was running, the compressor run was loud. You could put it on standby. So I put it on standby to shut the compressor off while we were having this discussion. But I set it to 6C range. And basically what that means is it'll stay off until the blood starts to reach 6C and it'll turn itself back on. Okay. So we have that, you know, that protective feature. If you screw it up, it'll turn itself back on. It won't allow you to let the blood go out of range.
Nice.
Tech deal. But you hit that, and then.
So that's the home button.
You hit the menu. Yep. You hit the home button, the menu screen. And then you go down to the temperature record. There's a temperature record. You push that. And then so right now you can. You probably can't see it, but I'll just show you what it looks like and see if you can see it in there. You see that white line? Can you see that?
Yeah. Yes, I can.
So this has been plugged in for a couple of weeks. So that white line is the temperature of the blood product for the past couple of weeks. So it hasn't gone out of temperature range. But there's some color coding on there, red, yellow, red, green, and yellow. And so red basically means the at the bottom is blood got frozen for whatever reason. The heater didn't work. The battery ran out. The green means that's where that white line is. Your decision point, you see it's been green for weeks. Your blood's been in storage temperature for weeks. And then there's a yellow just above 6C. And then you'll be able to see in that yellow line how long it took you to get to 10C. So it's tracking that for you so you can make that decision on whether to put it back into storage or get it powered up. The blood's good. It's been in that transport temperature time for this long. And then if it gets into the red on top, then you peak past the 10C, and then you have to either use the blood or dispose of it. And the only reason why you would get in those ranges, meaning above 6C, is because there was no power. So the battery went dead. I don't know, crashed, bullet went through the battery or whatever. But the only reason why it wouldn't hold that temperature, well, there might be something faulty. The machine's broken. But if the machine is totally running 100%, then the only reason you would get into the yellow is because your battery died.
Yep.
Does that make sense?
Okay. It sure does.
Yep.
That data log, is that something that can be downloaded and sent up?
Yep. And it can be. We have an app that you can download the temperature log over, and I'll show you that real quick. So it goes, the temperature log goes for 70 days and then it drops off the last day.
Okay.
Right. And it goes 70 days, drops off the last day or the last day it drops off. But it takes the temperature according to the blood bank and the AAB standards. It takes the temperature every 4 hours of the blood and records it.
Okay.
And that's a blood bank requirement. And let me see if I can find this app. So we have this app here. And then I don't know if you can see that, but right now in range of me, I have 6 APRUs.
Okay.
Well, I have 7 that are running, that are close proximity to me. So it's giving the status of all those APRUs in range of this phone. So I got a bunch of green here. So all my APRUs are good to go. But I can also hit the log and it will give me the log of the device. Let me hit the device. Let me see if I can get any of these to pull up. But it pulls it down. The temperature log is pulling it down right now.
Okay.
But it pulls up the temperature log, and the log will be on your app, a PDF file or a HTML file. And then you just take that, and then you just put your email in there, and then it'll email you the log form, and you can store that digitally or print it out in your log book. And that's a requirement by the blood bank.
Yeah. But no, I could see just having the ability to at least somebody else just as a second measure, you know, if an ODA is like, we need to run our own blood storage, is just an extra verification that they're doing the right thing.
Yes. And it's all recorded. And plus, if you run your own blood bank, then there's the little log thing there. Oh. But if you're running your own blood bank, maybe you're not checked. But if you're drawing blood from the Armed Service blood bank, they're going to require you to do logs. So it might be the PA or it might be the surgeon, the battalion PA or the battalion surgeon. But one of those two is responsible for managing those temperature logs.
Yep.
Because if something goes wrong, then there'll be an investigation, and then the investigation will, first thing they'll do is go, where are the temperature logs?
Yep.
So you don't have to turn them into the blood bank, but if you're doing a blood program, they're going to look at those logs. If there's some type of mismatch, you know, something happens, there'll be an investigation. So just helps you, makes it easier for you to keep your logs.
Yeah. And it's just being a good steward of your own equipment and resources, you know, making sure that you're using safe products. When it comes
it helps with that decision process.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely does. When it comes to like blood storage, getting blood farther forward, is there anything else that I missed and we need to talk about?
Well, again, some things I think about is, okay, so you have the ODA with this APRU, Ranger Battalion, the SEALs, you know, they all have the APRU right now. And they're doing TTPs and they're figuring out how to get this in their vehicles, boats, how they're going to use all that. But what I think about is, okay, so you have far forward troops. You have far forward troops. They're out doing their thing. They're a long ways off. They're not getting evac. They may be getting airdrop, right? Some type of resupply. So my thing is, okay, blood expires. So that's going to have to be resupplied over time. So we're building a bigger blood refrigerator that can be used across all the roles for blood resupply. And I'm just using, we'll just use like Iraq with those log trains, right? And the fifth group guys, they were moving, and then they had these big trucks that were coming in to resupply them, for example. So then again, you could have this big blood refrigerator that lasts for 10 days on battery power. It's going to last for 10 days on battery power. Now you have a larger supply of blood to resupply those ODAs. So you show up to this ODA, you're like, hey, give me your expired or whatever's going to expire, and then we're going to give you these six. Or you can airdrop our devices too. Obviously, properly packaged,
but you can just throw it out of the plane.
Just don't throw it out of the plane, put it on a chute. But again, when it hits the drop zone, you have days to get to it to get that resupply of blood because it'll run on that battery. The same way with the bigger one. So in my mind, it's like, how do we resupply these guys now? So we got a 10-day battery coming out. You could put this on a drone and fly it out on a drone if you want. The one thing they talk about the drones is they're like, oh, yeah, we're going to resupply this blood on the drone. I'm like, okay, so where's the blood stored to put on that drone? And then they go, what? I'm like, you got to have a refrigerator for the blood to put it on the drone. And they're like, oh, yeah, we haven't thought that out so far. We're still trying to work the drone thing. But again, it's cool, like, where are you storing blood to put on the drone? You still have to store it somewhere in a storage refrigerator. So anyways, I'm just thinking of like, how do we push everything forward? And then eventually maybe if it gets good enough, you can push blood back that's about to expire, get it to the roll three, to the cache, and maybe there's some. So that's a long way vision out. But again, it's like, how do we push blood forward to you guys? You're going to need more devices in that chain to keep the blood going forward. And you got your one walking blood bank. So you got your one too, you know?
Yep.
Got your stored blood, start your walking blood bank. You use your stored blood, put your walking blood bank in there, or someone needs more than six, they need 12, or you have three serious casualties and you need 15 bags of blood. Well, you got six here, and then you got as much as you can pull off the walking blood bank. You might not even have enough with the walking blood bank, depending on how many people you have.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
It's a hard thing to figure out, for sure.
It is. It is. Especially there's quite a few units I've run into where their SOP is, I'm going to pull blood off of Frank, you know?
Yeah. What's his blood type?
I don't know.
Yeah. You know, and that's the other thing. If you got cold store, I'm glad you brought that up. If you got a cold stored, low titer, O negative, your risk of mismatch is a lot lower when there's chaos and you're freaking out and you're trying to move at the same time and you're trying to draw blood and this casualty, you're on vehicles. Now you just going off on a helicopter, you know, you just need to grab a bag of blood and get it on. You're not as worried about that mismatch of blood product and all the, in that chaotic scenario. You're like, I pull it out, should be good to go. I should put it on and we can just keep on moving. So that's just my other thought on that.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you, Monty. I really appreciate you coming on.
No, thank you for having me on. It was fun.
for today's podcast, be sure to go to our website, www.prolongfieldcare.org. Find us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Subscribe and stay on the bleeding edge of combat medicine. This is Dennis for the PFC Podcast. Out. Boy is waiting there for you.